the last batch of brownies. Dr. Breed was mistaken about at least one thing. There was such thing as Ice-9, and Ice-9 was on Earth. Ice-9 was the last gift Felix Honecker created for mankind before going to his just reward. He did it without anyone's realizing what he was doing. He did it without leaving records of what he'd done. True, elaborate apparatus was necessary in the act of creation, but it already existed in the research laboratory.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus ceruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps a sin flood of statism out of your brain. Can you feel it? Can you feel it, Megan? Is it working? Can you feel it?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Excellent. Excellent.
I'm feeling it.
This is Michael Dean. I am the Iron Hamster. And on the other end of the inner tubes, we have Megan, Ms. MK Lords. And what is your radio wrestling name?
The Wolfram Panther.
Wolfram Panther. Yeah, we were talking about guns and stuff before the show started. We watched this little vignette. It's a 3.5 minute thing that I will link, or if you want to just play the home game version, search on YouTube, search Lord of War, Life of a Bullet. And it is the first 3 minutes of the Nicolas Cage movie Lord of War, which is about, it's based on roughly, loosely on the life of an actual international arms dealer who operated for a couple decades. And this animation, I guess I'd call it an animation. Animation means something different than when I was a kid. When I was a kid, it meant cartoons, and now it means anything you do with visual media that moves. And in this case, it's it looks like the life of a bullet from the bullet's point of view, from the Soviet factory into some child soldier or child bystander, probably his body, in some war-torn African region. And it doesn't look like cartoons or animation. It looks like actual film of the life of a bullet. It's pretty bizarre, yeah. Man. What do you think?
Well, yeah, it looks like it's a GoPro attached to a bullet. So yeah, it starts out, it goes through like the manufacturing process, and that part's really cool. And then it gets, you know, transferred to, you know, goes through a bunch of different hands and winds up, you know, in the barrel of a gun. And it's, yeah, it was a really interesting intro. It's an interesting process to learn about too, like how bullets are made, but even more so the arms dealing part of it. I mean, it's definitely a dark part that, you know, you see a lot of problems when you have an empire that's supported by war. You know, these things happen. And
let me interject for a second. If anyone's just tuning in to the Freedom Fiends and thinks we are gun grabbers, you carry a gun, don't you?
Just about every day. Yes.
Yeah, I carry a gun every day. Yeah, man, we're not gun grabbers. We're war grabbers. We hate war.
Yes.
We hate war and senseless killing. We like guns. But I actually have some of the bullets and one of the rifles that they're portraying in there. 7.62x39, comes in big boxes, Cold War surplus. You can buy it cheap. It is cheap. And, if you don't have enough already, you should probably get it because, you know, I mean, they've been saying forever, you should buy some more guns and ammo if you don't have any, but there will come a time, and it has gotten harder. I don't know. I live in Wyoming, so I don't really feel the crunch of that kind of stuff. But I do remember, like, both times Obama got elected, the shelves were bare in the store. But if you buy bullets in a store, you're square, man. That's not the best place to buy them in bulk. I wouldn't say you're square, but, you know, yeah, go on.
Yeah, you definitely saw that. And then, you know, after every school shooting, that's, you know, always a thing that happens. I know down here after Sandy Hook, it was pretty hard to find ammo and guns and things like that. And
yeah, you're in
pretty
Florida.
Much around the country.
You're
yeah,
in Florida.
Florida. Yep. So not the worst gun laws, you know, not, you know, the best. And you still have to have a license to conceal carry and things like that. But at least you could have it for self-defense.
Yeah. In Wyoming, I'm like gun law? What? I don't know what that is. Yeah, this is it's the least populated state. It's the most rural state. It's got the lowest population per square mile of any state except Alaska. It's got not the lowest murder rate per capita, but it's got the lowest murder rate in the country. It's got the fourth lowest murder rate per capita. There are like seven murders a year here or something. And the thing is, too, like none of them, almost none of them ever are like strangers getting shot on the street for not giving up their wallet. It's almost always family members or, you know, crazy people that know each other or drug deals gone bad. There's very little stranger on stranger murder. There is actually a lot of acquaintance on acquaintance violence. There's a lot of bar fights here, and there's, you know, people, they're mostly involving alcohol. But if you don't hang out in places like that, which I don't, I mean, you know, you're probably more likely to get gored by a bison than you are to get shot by someone on the street.
Yeah, and in Florida, it depends on what part of Florida you're in. Down in the Miami area, it's more drug-related violence. Up here, it's more kind of like addiction related violence. Kind of sounds weird. But most of all, the violence in Florida seems to come from the police.
So by the difference between drug and addiction related, you mean in Miami it's drug trade related, and up north mm-hmm. it's more like addicts trying to score.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So. And that's not because drugs are bad. That's because the government makes them illegal. If they're freely available in vending machines, most of the violence would go away. There'd be a lot less violence in society in general, and prisons would be about half as full as they are, or less full.
Well, yeah, and we're kind of seeing a huge increase in opiates in the past few years in Florida, and that's specifically because the government's been cracking down on the manufacture of it, on the sales of it, things like that, and increasing the sentences for what you get caught. So you can get caught with a smaller amount of opiates and go to jail for much longer now. And it hasn't really solved the problem of people being addicted to opiates.
So wait, are you saying that there's an increase in pharmaceutical opiates or in
yes.
like heroin?
A pharmaceutical opiates.
Yeah, because that goes yes. that swings back and forth every few years in a lot of places. Like they, you know, they crack down really hard on heroin, so all of a sudden there's a lot of people abusing Percocet and things like that. And then they mm-hmm. crack down really hard on that, and then the streets get flooded with heroin again. So it's whack-a-mole, man.
Yep.
We're on the radio right now in Sarasota, Florida.
Ah.
That's relatively
now, Sarasota's pretty nice.
Yeah?
I do like it down in Sarasota.
And you're not just saying that because they're listening, are you?
Oh, no, not at all. No, like I'm up in Pensacola, which is, lower Alabama. So I kind of like the Sarasota, Tampa area. It's really nice down
there. It's Pennsylbama. Yeah.
It's Pennsylbama.
There's a part of Pennsylvania called Pennsyltucky. Do you know about that? And Pennsylvania does not border Kentucky, but it's the southern like 40 miles of Pennsylvania. Everything between Pittsburgh and Philly is really, really rural, really red state, really gun culture, kind of like Kentucky. And we are on the radio in Kentucky, too. So I'm not denigrating Kentucky, but I'm comparing. I lived in Pennsyltucky, although I never heard that term. I never heard that term until that show Orange is the New Black came out. And there's a character in there named Pennsyltucky who is pretty rural, and she is from Pennsyltucky. So they call her that. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, she's a meth addict who is in prison because she shot a lady in the abortion clinic in the butt because she was in getting her fifth abortion. And the lady in the abortion clinic said, "Oh, this is your fifth one. Next one should be free." Like joking, like,
oh.
like they, you know, and she went out to her boyfriend's truck. Her boyfriend's sitting in the truck and grabbed his, as he put it, don't use up my squirrel bullets. Took his, you know, 20 gauge shotgun and went in and shot the lady in the butt. And that's how Pennsyltucky ends up in prison.
Wow, that sounds like some Florida stuff.
That sounds like some Florida. You know, isn't there a Twitter feed called Florida Man?
I was just about to say that Florida Man is one of the best Twitters to follow because yeah, it's just headlines from Florida, and Florida happens to have a lot of crazy stuff happen in it because there's a lot of people coming from all over the country. You know, they come down all times of the year, and it increases. There's a lot of weird violence and just very. So there's a Florida woman one too, but just very strange headlines that start with Florida Man, and they all link to real news stories.
Like what? Give me a couple examples.
Oh, man. Let me see if I can bring it up real quick.
I'm sure there's something about alligators, but...
Yeah. There's always stuff like that. Gators, are always an issue.
Gators are always an issue. I can't fathom that.
Well,
man.
In South Florida. More.
I can't fathom the day-to-day possibility of large, violent reptiles. It just seems so. They seem like dinosaurs to me, man. I mean, there are violent beasts in my state. There are, you know, coyotes and mountain lions, also known as pumas, also known as cougars. And they go meow. And I'm talking about the cat, not the ladies. And what else is there here? There are wolverines or no badgers. There's all sorts of things here that'll chew you up, but there aren't any vicious man-eating reptiles here that I know of.
Wow, let's see. So Florida man starts argument with store clerk who refused to take bubble gum instead of money. Florida man attempts to avoid arrest by hugging palm tree. Florida man assaults friend with bucket during fight over whether or not acquaintance was dead.
I got to tell some funny bucket thing. This kind of reminds, that's weird. When I was a teenager, I had some friends who got arrested. They were going to score mushrooms in a different town. We were all like 16. I had nothing to do with this except I knew these people. So they were driving a moped on the highway. First of all, like, you know, illegal. Second of all, and we'll get pulled over. Second of all, but they made it to the other town, like 10 miles away on the highway, bought the mushrooms and were coming back. And they'd only had one helmet, and the other one being safety conscious, or maybe just thinking like this would not get him pulled over. He took a metal bucket, you know, like a bucket you'd wash windows with, and then stuffed it full of newspapers to make a buffer in it so it would fit his head, and just put it on his head with the bucket handle under his chin. And they got pulled over tooling along the side of the highway at like, you know, 15 miles an hour or something with a bucket on his head and mushrooms in his pocket. That could be a That could be a Florida man story, but it was actually an upstate Western New York man. Western New York boy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like some Florida. Oh, this is great. Florida man tries to ignite race war near Disney World. It's like some Charles Manson stuff.
Yeah, man. And
like,
we're going to talk about Charles Manson later because Charles Manson is in love, and he's 80-year-old Charles Manson is marrying a 26-year-old hippie woman. And nothing against hippie women. You're a hippie woman who carries a gun. right. And, you know, if you're dating Charles Manson, you'll probably be a hippie woman who carries a gun, but maybe for different reasons. Who knows? This is not a celebrity gossip show. We never pick up the news other than reading Florida Man. We never pick up the newspaper and see what's happening and talk about it. We're not a gossip show. But if we get around to it today, we got to talk about the fact that Charles Manson is marrying soon. It's pretty awesome. Pretty bizarre. Pretty weird.
He's got game. You know, I'm surprised.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back with a six-minute interview with Jim Jesus, creator of Libertarians Against Humanity. And you can go to libertariansagainsthumanity.com right now to see what we're going to be talking about. It's his new game that's taken off. It's sweeping the nation. I think Florida Man is playing it now.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
That might be fake.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Founding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
This is Mr. Michael Dean talking with MK Lords, and we're talking about guns and crazy stuff people get arrested for before the break. And you know, one place I wanted to go with that maybe was what do you think are solutions for the fact that people have guns all over the world and kill each other?
Solutions for that, man. I mean, there's.
Hey, Jim, you there? You there?
Hello.
Hello. This is Michael Dean, and we're talking about guns and government guns. You know, the kind of things that like. You there? You there?
All right. All right. Back?
Yeah, that okay. Was Jim Jesus tried to join the show during not a break, and if he's listening, he should know you can't do that. You have to do it. You have to do it during a break, not during a segment. So, yeah. Did you hear my question?
I did. Yeah, how to go about the world peace business. Yeah.
What do you do about that? You know, quarter of a billion AK-47 sitting around in the hands of people who aren't all using them for self-defense.
Well, so anti-war activism is kind of where I got my start in activism on the left. And it's one of those things that is really, really difficult work. And it's very stressful when you start studying foreign policy and looking at all the wars that we're involved in currently and have been involved in. It really seems like an uphill battle. I'm still definitely anti-war, but it's very hard to approach things tactically because even if you, which, you know, I have guns, I'm all for citizens carrying guns, you know, people being able to carry guns. But ultimately, you do face a government that has much bigger guns than you. And I don't know that there's a good solution to that. You know, it's, we're not going to take government guns away by force.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, a lot of it, I think, starts kind of internally, you know, with yourself, finding a degree of peace in your life, realizing that, you know, there are guns behind these things called laws, and recognizing that that's not a way to have relationships with people and interact civilly in society.
I would say, and this is a very simplified explanation, but I think there's more truth to it than what a lot of governments say or any government say most of the time. You know, once in a while, some like think tank in a government organization might actually write down something that's true that they observe, but it's just filled in a whole so much agenda that it's hard to even tell. But so, generally, when people are happy and prosperous, they have guns and they don't kill their neighbors with them. Most of America is a good example of that. And anybody who quotes statistics about gun violence, most of the gun violence is inner city people who are really, really poor and they're fighting over, you know, a corner where they make money. And or, you know, it's people who are just crazy and drink a lot of alcohol and shoot their neighbors or loved ones or whatever. And I don't know what to do about that. But about the massive gun violence in America, most of it is over economics and over feeling powerless. And a lot of that comes, I blame the governments, plural, all of them for that. And a lot of that comes from people being miserable. And I don't want to redistribute the wealth of the world to make people less miserable. I want to undistribute the stealing done by governments and the blockages in people's way of actually making a living. Like, I mean, even things like I have a friend in Ghana, Africa, who, you know, lives on about 1/20th as much money I do. And he's doing better than a lot of his neighbors. You know, he has a farm and he sells his goods and stuff. But, you know, I mean, if you set up an apple cart in his town, you know, and you're providing a service, like the government will shut you down. And to get a permit to run an apple cart there is so expensive that someone who's trying to sell apples can't do it. So even things like that in places where there's like not much money to go around, it's still being stolen by government thuggery. And I really think that, I mean, this sounds like magic fairy dust, but I really think Bitcoin can solve a lot of the problems of the world. And we're going to talk about that a lot in this show. What do you think?
Yeah, I've written on this topic with Bitcoin. I don't want to be too overly idealistic, but what Bitcoin does is provide an alternative to the dollar. And if you know what the dollar is backed by, then
the dollar or the dinar or the yen or anything. Yeah, any right. Fiat currency. Yep, and it takes governments out of the equation. They're still trying to get into the equation, but it's harder. We'll be back after this trip to the market. Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at trueshibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. Trueshibes.com.
It's Mark D. This is the Freedom Fiends. And, yeah, we had some sound issues there. And basically what it comes down to is my opinion is that Skype is almost a virus. And we're working on the cure for that. Derek Slopey is working on Fiend Phone. which is going to be designed specifically for this purpose, not for the multi-purpose. Works okay some of the time and doesn't work at all other times. Skype, especially when you try to do a three-way call. So we're going to try to get Jim back in the next segment to talk about Libertarians Against Humanity. And you can go to libertariansagainsthumanity.com. But in the meantime, we're going to talk about some solutions here. And the one of them might be the magical internet money made of fairy dust and electricity and mushrooms and gold wires twinkling on a dancing lodestone of a computer called Bitcoin. So go ahead, MK.
All right. So I have up right now is an article on antiwar.com by Roger Ver. And it's called How Bitcoin Can Stop War. And it's actually a pretty comprehensive article. I really recommend reading it. It goes into how Bitcoin works, how you can kind of secure Bitcoin, all now, that. But at the very end, there's a good section. Go ahead.
Before, I want to say a little bit about Roger Ver. Before someone hears this article and says, oh, that's just conjecture. Roger Ver is a multi-millionaire because he got into Bitcoin early. And he didn't invest in the stock market. He had a bunch of computers sitting around because he owned a computer shop. And he was like, wow, I've heard of this thing called Bitcoin. It seems worthless, and right now you can't even buy a pizza for 10,000 of them, but I'm going to mine them anyway. And he mined them on a bunch of cheap computers back when you could do that. And he is rich from Bitcoin. So go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's known as the Bitcoin Jesus. So pretty well respected in the community and really great talk, really great speaker and all that.
Not to be confused with Jim Jesus, who is not a libertarian millionaire, but he is trying to Kickstarter or Indiegogo fund Libertarians Against Humanity. And if you go to libertariansagainsthumanity.com, he has just passed his $1,000 threshold. So he actually gets the money to make the first deck, print the first batch of decks in Hong Kong. But if you want to help him make more and get some decks your own, go check that out. So go on with Roger Ver's theories and ideas.
So I've written on this before, too, kind of from a philosophic level. At Bitcoin Not Bombs, we call dollars the blood dollars, basically, because they're backed by war and empire and all of these, you know, bad things. Petrodollar.
I think you call them snot rags.
Snot rags. Yeah. Yeah. So part of it is philosophical. Holding dollars is a political decision, and so is holding Bitcoin. So when you're choosing to use Bitcoin, you're using money that's not backed by empire. So Roger Ver makes the point that it's great because the United States can print all of the money they want to finance these wars. With Bitcoin, you have a finite supply. So there's only going to be 21 million that can ever be mined. And we're only about halfway through that right now.
And
the difficulty gets harder.
And the thing is, though, it's totally scalable to where the entire economy of the world could be done with those 21 million Bitcoin because they're divisible down to what? The millionth?
Yes, actually, it was just in this article, the exact amount. But yeah, they're highly, highly divisible.
Yeah, and if the price of a Bitcoin goes up to, you know, $10 million and they're divisible down to a dollar, you know, you could pretty much do anything you want with them that you do with dollars now or dinero or yen or anything.
Yeah, it's 100 millionth of a Bitcoin.
That's a Satoshi.
So that's how, yep, that's right. So, he makes some really good points here. And, ultimately you're moving your money out of empire for people who are tax resistors. You know, now you are required, you know, by law to pay all of your taxes on Bitcoin. So, I'm not a person who thinks tax resistance is the most effective strategy.
Yeah, me either. I pay my taxes and I do not say that like most Americans. A lot of Americans are like, I'm a proud tax paying law abiding. I pay my taxes. I pay them correctly to the way they're supposed to be paid, the proper paperwork and the proper amount. And I cringe every time I do it. I hate it.
I do it so they don't kidnap me, you know? Yeah. So it's just like a bribe is how I think of it.
Yeah. I do it so they don't kidnap me so I can spend 365 days a year on commercial, government controlled radio talking about how immoral all governments are.
Right. Well, as long as we have free speech, we should use it.
Well, there was somebody said during the Vietnam War, I forget which government thug it was. It might have been one of the guys under Nixon said something like, I don't care how much these people protest as long as they pay their taxes. And that pretty much tells you all you need to know about the military industrial complex.
Right. And when we're looking at spending and how much of our taxes go towards war, That's a huge problem. And I understand philosophically why someone would want to be a tax resister. I think that there's a strong moral and philosophical argument for that. You know, I'm afraid of going to jail. I don't have very much money.
Yeah, and there are people,
you know, I pay my taxes.
There are people who say that, you know, we're just theorists and we don't walk our talk because we pay our taxes. It's actually something I've done a lot of hard soul searching on and come up with the decision of, you know, that it's the lesser of, I don't know, I don't want to go to prison. And I think I can do more good out here in front of a microphone than I could do in prison, you know, making a collect call into Free Talk Live once a month or something.
Yeah, that's kind of my argument for it, too. I feel that I'm more useful in my activism outside of prison. Not that other activists haven't been useful within prison, but I do find, it's not a place I really want to be. And until, you know, until we see a better solutions to keeping political activists out of jail, which I don't really see a solution that being made, then, you know, it's kind of up to us to be discreet and diligent in our behavior and try to stay under the radar.
I got to say, actually, as far as activism, and this, I have a pretty unpopular opinion of it. I think that getting yourself arrested as a protest isn't going to change anything, or at least it's not going to change anything fast enough that it's worth it. And it's basically going to end up with the best minds of our generation behind bars and not able to really do much.
Right, right. You know, and I'm a huge advocate of private civil disobedience. You know, there, for instance, if you want marijuana to be legalized and it's not legal in your state, you know, maybe it's not the best idea to go out and have like a smoke down session outside of City Hall.
Yeah.
You know, especially not here in Florida. But, you know, in the privacy of your own home, that's a form of civil disobedience. That's a form of, it's light activism, but it is a form of protest. Yeah. And you're not putting yourself at risk. And you're not putting your family at risk, too, you know.
Although, that's
always a problem.
I got to say, I really have a lot of respect for that 90-something-year-old man in Fort Lauderdale that keeps getting arrested feeding the homeless.
Yeah. Now, when it comes down to feeding the homeless, and you know, this is something, you know, I've kind of seen in Pensacola, that there are some things that I think warrant going to jail for. That is one of those things where if the cops were trying to prevent me from feeding homeless people, then I would just say, you know, that's a huge moral failing. It's worse than, you know, oh, I'm going to maybe, you know, I'm not going to use marijuana openly or something. That's that, to me, I understand the activism behind that, but I don't know that that's an effective way to, you know, get arrested. And it doesn't really promote freedom, but someone who's trying to feed homeless people getting arrested, that there's a stronger moral case for that. And people are able to look at activists like that and say, you know, maybe they're not all just crazy pothead, you know, hippie socialists. You know, maybe there's something to this police state crushing people and preventing them from doing something that should not be morally objectionable at all.
Also, there's a certain amount of theater, of useful theater, to the fact that that guy is, you know, a war vet in his 90s, where it gets a lot more attention and sympathy than some 21-year-old hipster would get for getting arrested for the same thing.
Well, and actually some of the people around him were Food Not Bombs members that my friend Mike up here with Sean's Outpost knows and was friends with. So they got arrested too. They didn't get as much publicity, but they were thrown in jail. They did a hunger strike and he was up here like hunger striking in solidarity with them. But a lot of young kids got arrested. A lot of younger people are involved in Food Not Bombs and they were in the foreground. You can even see in the videos, a lot of the people that were in the the background there as he was being arrested, also ended up getting arrested. So they really went through it, did a, you know, sweep. Fort Lauderdale is really, really hard on the homeless.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think Florida, especially, you see a lot of snowbirds moving down here and a lot of wealth coming into certain areas, and they want their cities to look nice and they don't want to have to see the riffraff. And Florida isn't in the best economic situation, despite these wealthier people moving down. So there is a huge homelessness problem. But they collude, the local business owners and the wealthier people collude with the local governments to try to hide the problem.
There's also a monkey problem there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because there's, I think my brother used to live there and I visited him there a couple times. And he lived next to the last remaining patch of Everglades in the city. And we would hear like monkeys like murdering each other in the Everglades at night. It was really blood curdling.
Yeah, that wouldn't be surprising.
And eating parrots, and the parrots didn't like that and made a lot of noise too.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, there's some crazy animals in Florida. Mm-hmm. Some crazy snakes and all kinds of crazy wildlife.
Yeah, but it's nothing like Australia. Australia has like everything under the sun that will kill you in one country, and you can't carry a gun there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that country is, it's kind of weird because it's kind of like off the radar of America. Like the prime minister of Australia a couple decades ago, like went for a swim, got carried out by the tide and drowned in the ocean, like just disappeared. Like they never found him. Like most Americans never heard that. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't heard that. So.
Yeah. And I think wasn't it the actor? I thought it was the croc hunter, but I think it was the actor who played Crocodile Dundee. Wasn't he the one that was killed by the government for having guns after you're supposed to turn him in?
Oh, I don't know. I never heard of that.
I'll look that up while you talk more about Bitcoin.
Yeah. So Bitcoin is great for a lot of things. You know, I do try to temper my enthusiasm about it. And a couple articles I do want to reference is by Andrea Castillo. It's called Bitcoin is Great, But It Won't Fix Our Monkey Brains. So it takes kind of a sobering look at, you know, Bitcoin. There's a lot of promise. I'm still very optimistic about it. But realistically speaking, there are a lot of scams going on in the space. And it's not free of human corruption, basically. There's no centralized point of failure. There's no middleman getting in between you sending value, sending Bitcoin to another person anywhere in the world. But at the same time, there's a lot of, you know, businesses that are coming out. Butterfly Labs sold a bunch of miners get delivered in TGOX.
Yeah, it's the marketplace figuring itself out. It was not the guy who played. It wasn't Paul Hogan. He's still alive. It was the guy Crocodile Dundee was based on. Roddy Ansel.
Oh, okay, based on. All right.
Yeah, he was ranting about Freemasons and killed by the police. Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiends, Michael Dean and MK Lords. Have you been contacted by the government, MK Lords?
No, I have not been contacted by the government.
Good. We're trying to get through to Jim Jesus, who's on planet LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And as soon as we get a hold of him, we're going to talk about liberty. Well, we could talk. You and I could talk, MK Lords, about libertarians against humanity. What do you think of this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's so necessary and needed. First, just from a humor aspect, I just think there's not enough humor in libertarianism. Like they tend to take themselves a little too seriously. So I like that this is kind of poking fun at that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the best way to kind of get a message across, too, is when someone laughs, that kind of lowers their defenses. They can kind of take in maybe a conflicting idea. And with a lot of the things it kind of references, libertarians understand and know about, and you know, it's a good way to kind of break down barriers within libertarianism, too. Maybe some of the controversies, you know, bringing light to some of that. And, you know, just mostly having fun, though. I think that's really necessary.
Did we get through to Jim yet?
Of course you did.
All right, Jim, you just got in from Planet LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. So why do you want...
my arms tired.
Why do you hate the liberty movement? Why do you want to make fun of libertarians?
Because I hate liberty. Of course.
Yes. No, you don't.
No, I love Liberty. How it all started was basically we used to play Cards Against Humanity with my friends online. One of which was a YouTuber by the name Exomniverse. And we thought it would be great if there was like a card about Stefan Molyneux, the truth about. And we couldn't figure out a way for them to implement it into the online version of the game until a few times that we were playing, we noticed that you can make your own cards on CardCast. And so we just started getting to work and we had a bunch of people contributing and everyone just went crazy over it.
Yeah, and you're making actual physical decks, and you're raising money to do that on Indiegogo, and people can go to libertariansagainsthumanity.com, or if that's too long, just type librarians against humanity into Google, and you'll probably end up in the right place. So, but you're making physical cards. How many decks have you actually gotten made now? Is it one or more?
We made the sample deck. I'm going to be ordering a personal deck for me just to make sure that I got the box design all worked out and
they
everything's
look great,
fine.
Man, they look great. You got them done in mm-hmm. Hong Kong, which is like LibPair on Earth, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Milton Friedman's LibPair.
It's libertarian paradise for people who like money and still want some government around them. But
yeah, mini statists.
How long does it take to get them shipped from Hong Kong?
It took me about probably a week and a half for them to print them out and then ship them out. And it's probably going to take a little bit longer considering I'm ordering a minimum of 100 cards. If we get to 100 decks. 100 decks is 72 cards. If we get to 2,000, we'll have to make 100 more. Then 3,000, we're going to make 100 of all three decks in one deck. And they come in their own box and everything.
Yep. And today you passed your $1,000 line, because you're doing there's two kinds of funding on Indiegogo. Maybe there might be three. I know of two. I've done one where you pay a higher percentage. You pay like, I don't know, 16% or something like that of what you get, but you get all of it even if you don't reach your goal. But you're going for the all or none, where you get mm-hmm. more of the money, but you have to reach the threshold goal to get it. And you had a 2-month goal of $1,000, and you made that in what, 2.5 weeks?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
We still have about a week and some change to get it done. So
let's say you doubled that in the 2 months. What does that bring that getting the $1,000 only wouldn't bring?
Well, that means that we're going to be releasing volume one and volume two of Libertarians Against Humanity. And you can go to the website and look at what cards are in which deck. And if you get one card, I'll basically send you an email asking you, do you want volume one or do you want volume two? If you ordered, I think, was it the $100 perk? Then I'll ask you, of your four decks, which ones do you want for your four decks?
Cool. Yeah. And if did you send out a thing to everybody who donated on Indiegogo to find out which one they wanted?
I'm going to be doing that as we start getting closer, and I can actually start to see whether or not I'm going to be wasting my time spending all this time. Like, do you want volume two and then not make it? So.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Final question. Are you true Shibes?
No.
Yeah. There's a rumor that you're true Shibes, but you're not true Shibes. But, you should make a t-shirt that says, we are all true Shibes, I think.
I'll get to work.
Make t-shirts that say, I am true Shibes. All right, Dobby Barker makes t-shirts already. He could do that. All right, Jim Jesus, thanks a lot for coming on. Thanks. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Yes. For making Libertarians Against Humanity. And we'll be back for hour two. Freedom Feeds with MK Lords and I talking about Bitcoin and how it's going to save the planet from the statists. Worms.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or statists you haven't defooed yet. Because if we don't laugh, the statists win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those with easily rustled jimmies. Consult a physician if you experience blood pressure or laughter lasts longer than 4 hours.
That's libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom's Fiends on the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Fiend, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's low-orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPerer 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Have you been contacted by the government? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government, Megan?
I'm safe. I'm super safe and very re-educated.
Yeah, I made up a joke years ago, something about the existence of, you know, that we need libertarian reindoctrination camps, which is completely ridiculous, because the idea of a reindoctrination camp is like, you know, something someone is forced to do, which is very unlibertarian. But yeah, I think it's kind of funny. I don't really mean it. And I don't really think that the aliens from a possibly habitable planet in the Alpha Centauri region are going to hear the Freedom Fiends radio waves 4.3 years after we first started broadcasting 1.3 years ago, and come in 2017, hear us. And somehow it won't take them that long to get here. Or maybe they'll just email us the technology to protect us from the state. But I don't really, wouldn't it be nice? That's all I say about it. It's kind of like, you know, when people were like, when I asked Scott Horton on an interview one time, so do you think Ron Paul's going to win and become president? And he said, wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
Which was basically like, don't count on it, but that'd be fun. Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And, Ron Paul.
Oh, Ron Paul. Oh, Ron Paul.
He tried.
He was a good philosopher, and he brought a lot of good thoughts. I mean, I think he made more anarchists than anybody, except, you know, the drug war. And when we say anarchists, we're not talking about violent people. We're talking about people who... anarcho-capitalists, people voluntarists, people who think that they don't necessarily need kings or leaders dividing their money up. And even the Republicans want to redistribute wealth. They just do it in different directions than the Democrats.
Right, right. They make sure it's secluded to certain sectors. And I do wonder if, just tactically wise, maybe libertarians aren't so great at getting as many audiences, getting the message out as broadly, because they refuse to participate in some of the tactics of the left that are in some ways very effective, the kind of emotional manipulation.
Yeah.
I've noticed that a lot of libertarians, very principled people, you know, they're trying to make these arguments from principles and from rationality and stuff, but, you know, it's varying results. And unfortunately, you're kind of seeing, you know, a rise in leftism, and it's mostly... kind of, you know, emotional tactics.
Not me, man. I make propaganda films. Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom has some facts in it, but it is a straight up propaganda film for capitalism and self-defense that is done with the tricks that the left use. I basically, Michael Moore taught me how to make films, and without trying to, and Michael Moore would hate my films because they're everything he doesn't believe in, but they use a lot of his tactics.
Well, yeah, and I think that to a degree that's necessary. So you go with what works, and we need more propaganda and liberty.
Good. We need more good propaganda and liberty. And good part of starting to make good propaganda and liberty is making good quality audio and video. And I'm no expert on filmmaking. I've made a few films. I've made some documentaries. I've made a documentary even that was narrated by Robert Downey Jr., reading narration that I wrote, and I was in the studio. I like to say I directed him, but I really, he didn't need any direction. I gave him one note on one line. But other than that, you know, it was just kind of cool to like actually do a film that was, you know, financed. We didn't even finance it with credit cards. We didn't even have credit cards. It was financed nickel and dimes, man. And, you know, he did the narration on it. That was pretty cool. So, and you know, I mean, we went into a studio to do that. We found someone who was into the project who would do it for free. I mean, I made like 50 cents an hour on that film over working full time for over a year. But you know, a lot of, if you have something good, people are willing to help do it. And I do a lot of stuff that I don't even care if it makes money. I like to make money and I do things to make money, but a lot of the stuff I do is just to do it. But I still try to make it of the quality that, the mainstream is at. And making quality audio is one of the simplest things in the world. And I can't believe how many people are doing podcasts and doing videos with just horrible audio. And I mean, for $50, you can get a good mic and set it up right, which isn't that hard, but it's not intuitive. You're using a $50 mic, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you sound pretty good, and you're on radio.
Yeah. It's better than my $100 mic. So,
which is what?
The Yeti.
Oh, I hate the Yeti. Here, let me
give you... The much-hated Yeti.
Here, I'm going to do some EQ on you and make you sound even better. Go ahead and talk.
All right.
Yeah. There.
All right. Talking right now. The Yeti. I still have it. I might use it for some things.
I think you should shoot it and videotape yourself shooting it.
I don't shoot inanimate objects. It's just a waste of ammo.
I know. But if you did that, I would put it on Creamy Radio Audio website. I think it would be a valuable statement. Yeah.
Oh, man.
My problem with the Yeti mic is it's designed to look cool and it's not cool. I really hate things where they spend more time on the design of the look than on the functionality. I hate how people recommend things that they shouldn't, that are like that. You know, it's not the best mic. You should be getting the Audio-Technica USB 2005 mic, which is what we're using. And if anyone wants to buy that mic cheap and they want to know what it is and you don't remember what it is, go to the Freedom Fiend site, freedomfiends.com. That's Freedom Foxtrot Echo Echo November Sierra, and go down on the right sidebar. And there's a link there. It says, get the wonderful mic our co-hosts use. So, and you can actually buy it with Bitcoin, because you can get, you can use Bitcoin on gift.com, GYFT.com, and buy Amazon gift cards that you can use online. So there, you can buy that mic with Bitcoin. So here to tell us more about Bitcoin is MK Lords. Take it, Megan.
Bitcoin. So I was talking about earlier, Andrea Castillo's article, Bitcoin is great, but it won't fix our monkey brains. Highly, highly recommend reading this. It's a very comprehensive look at Bitcoin. And it is great. It is really great. You know, we have the opportunity to have money that is not controlled by any government entity, that can't be devalued by any government. It can't be stopped by any central banks. And it has a lot of potential. I did a talk this weekend at Libertopia about Bitcoin and activism called Everyone Hates Activism and how Bitcoin is changing that. So I made the argument that if you are a direct action activist, it increases the effectiveness of your activism, at least in the small scale micro sense, which if you're doing this in a decentralized way, because Bitcoin also kind of provides for that, then you're having a bunch of different attacks, you know, all at once. So it's really good. It's good for charity. You know, it's good for funding controversial media organizations, even like WikiLeaks and antiwar.com. But what it's bringing in is this whole group of people who are unintentional activists, who they don't care about anti-war stuff. They don't really care about feeding homeless people. They care about buying stuff on Gift. So it's kind of created these unintentional activists who, just by spending and kind of using the you know, traits of consumerism that we've seen in our society, they're kind of building up this economy in Bitcoin. We've seen a bunch of good merchant adoption this year. And it's, I think things are kind of looking up. We've seen a lot of bad news too. I did focus a lot on that. So I do want to say, if people are new into Bitcoin, you know, find some people you trust who are really knowledgeable, and really do your due diligence on any business or charity or any organization that you come across that maybe sounds like a good idea.
Or timeshares in South America in a socialist country.
Yes. You know, there's a lot of, it's very easy to throw together a slick looking website and throw a bunch of Bitcoin jargon out there and look really legit. But ultimately, there's a lot of scams. And I think a lot of them are in the Bitcoin 2.0 space, as it's kind of called.
Yeah. And we're going to get to that. But what I will say is that you can't, people cannot logically denigrate Bitcoin because people have been scammed in Bitcoin. That is like saying no one should use dollar bills because people have been scammed out of dollar bills.
You know what the worst argument about Bitcoin is, and I've seen reporters actually say this, is, oh, well, what if ISIS uses Bitcoin to get a nuclear weapon, which is so fantastical. You can't even, it doesn't even warrant an answer, right? But there are people trying to make that argument. It's like, that does, that's not an argument. So yeah, they use cash to do that now.
You know, any terrorist organization that wants to buy something to further terrorism, you know, they're not really likely to use Bitcoin to do it. Here's why. Bitcoin is touted as anonymous. It's actually pseudo-anonymous. The truth of it is, it's actually in some ways far more traceable than bars of gold or $100 bills.
Yes.
It's definitely more traceable than bars of gold, because bars of gold have, you know, no serial number on them generally. If they do, they can be melted down and they're still gold and they're still worth the same amount of money. $100 bills have serial numbers on them. You know, gold, I guess you could trace the source of an actual batch of gold with, you know, atomic microspectrography or something, but it's pretty unlikely that that would happen. And it wouldn't even, it would only prove that the gold came from, you know, the same geographic region, or maybe foundry, or, you know, distillery, or whatever gold is made in, refinery. But, you know, if you follow Bitcoin transactions, they're not anonymous. They can be, can obfuscate if you really try. You can make it a lot harder, but any government that has unlimited resources and stolen money and printed money, can spend a lot of time on trying to track the source of a Bitcoin transaction.
Yes. And in fact, it's the opposite of anonymous in a lot of ways, unless you take some somewhat complex security measures to make it more anonymous. So you know, there's this thing called the public ledger. It's a record of all transactions. And if you can match up a Bitcoin address with an individual, you can see all of their transactions. And that's good in some ways if you're trying to provide transparency in an organization, say you run a nonprofit or a business of some kind and you're wanting to be accountable. So, or, you know, accountable to your donors and clients, then maybe that's a good thing. But ultimately, it's not that great for privacy unless you're really willing to take a few extra steps.
Yeah, so, and I know Cody Wilson's working on Dark Wallet, which is, you know, he calls it a money laundering piece of software. I don't know if that's accurate. And I know it's in like ultra alpha. I don't think it's even in beta now. But we had him on a while back, and he seemed hopeful, and people seemed to be really into the idea and had helped out with it. So I think it might go somewhere. Who knows?
He's very good at using that very extreme language. In fact, people have criticized him for this. They were like, oh, why are you calling it Dark Wallet? You should call it Rainbow Wallet.
Ew.
You know, and yeah, ew, like, he's an expert at it. He's really nailed this very subversive PR. And it's very threatening, too. I mean, coming out and saying, yeah, this is a device for money laundering. He just cuts straight to the point.
I would never do that. I would never do that. Yeah.
It's working somehow.
I did the first interview he ever did. It was on my Anarchy Gumbo podcast, and he was a lot more shy back then. He was like, he didn't even want to do an interview. I don't know what happened. He changed overnight, and it was pretty cool. Yeah.
Nice. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Yeah.
This is the Freedom Fiends. This is Michael Dean, and I'm talking to MK Ultra Lords, not her real name, MK Lords. And we're talking about Bitcoin and how it's going to save the world. How's it going to save the world?
Well, I don't know if it can save the world, but I like to think that it has a lot of potential.
Yeah.
So I've gone through, you know, I've gone through a lot of phases in my Bitcoin optimism lately. I started off like when I first really, when it finally clicked and I really understood it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to save the world. Amazing. And, you know, I've kind of, you know, gotten sobered a little bit on that as the year has gone through, because it's been a pretty tumultuous year for Bitcoin. I mean, it started out around $1,000 a Bitcoin, and now it's down to 400 something. And, you know, for a lot of people, it, you know, a lot of charities and stuff took a pretty big hit. And it's just growing pains, though. I think we're learning a lot. I feel like the Bitcoin community is kind of going through its like bitter teenager phase where it like hates everything. And it's like, you know, it's kind of reached that point where it's like, I hate everything. I want to, you know, but, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of really interesting things in 2015. I think we're going to see things like multi-sig wallets become a lot easier to use and a lot better. So I can go into that.
Yeah,
I don't know if so. There's a bunch of different wallets you can get, and you know the most common one is just a regular Bitcoin wallet. You can start it, you know, for on your phone or blockchain.info. You know, there are a few different wallets you can get. It's basically you hold the private keys to that wallet, and the private keys are able to decrypt the wallet so you can spend the funds. Now, a multi-signature wallet allows multiple people to hold keys, and it basically prevents one person from running off with all of the funds.
So does that mean that, like, if there was a partnership of three people, would three of them have to sign to take it out, or could two of three? Could you set it up that way, like in case one person dies or something?
It would be set up two of three.
It has to be two or three, or can you make it have to be three of three?
That's actually a good question. I think right now most of them are two of three.
Can they be higher numbers, like four or five or three of five?
Yes. Yeah. You can have higher numbers.
Okay.
So yeah, there are people kind of experimenting with different numbers. The most commonly used is two of three. You know, that kind of has, you know, maybe you have like a third party who's, you know, trusted, but more of kind of like an arbiter of some kind. So that might be a good setup, you know, especially for libertarians who are interested in things like dispute resolution organizations, you know, accountability, things like that. This is something that I think libertarians would be interested in. And it's good for corporate governance. You know, a lot of times we hear about these corrupt corporations or these corrupt CEOs running off with a bunch of client funds and things like that. So this kind of adds a degree of accountability where, I mean, still technically speaking, two people could collude and run off with money.
But that's true with any form of, you know, that's probably true of most corporate bank accounts too.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
So we're probably going to see some innovations in that coming out. We're going to see a lot more Bitcoin 2.0 stuff, which I don't know that we're really through Bitcoin 1.0. I don't know that we've reached.
I really don't think that. To recap, Bitcoin is a decentralized currency that uses encryption, that uses a public blockchain. It's something that never existed before in the world. People have been, you know, conjecturing something like this since the dawn of money and have been really talking about it in, you know, actual forms of how it would work since the 70s. But some anonymous person or group of people going by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto actually solved the problem about 5 years ago. And it wasn't worth much for the first year. The first Bitcoin transaction was a pizza for 10,000 Bitcoin. And a single Bitcoin now is worth about $400. And it did go up to 1,000 at one point. And it kind of seems like it's stabilized, like it's kind of found its level of where it wants to be, at least for now. Seems to be around $400. And Bitcoin 2.0 are projects based on the same kind of blockchain technology, but, you know, other cryptocurrencies or things that do something in addition, like Namecoin, which is an attempt at, well, it actually works for decentralized domain registration. You know, the idea of, you know, having a website that governments can't shut down. But I didn't work with the Namecoin community, but I had a lot of contact with the original developers of it. And
the whole thing has a lot of problems, and they're not technological problems. That's, you know, without getting nasty, that's what I could say about it is, there's a lot of technological, a lot of non-technological problems. There's also a couple technological problems with it. Like one is the squatting problem. Like registering a domain is so cheap, you know, like 5 cents. I think it's actually 2 cents now because the Namecoin has gone down so much that like some people, maybe even on the development team, I don't know, like registered every noun, you know, in the dictionary. Okay, so, yeah. Yep.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Freedom Fiends. Delivering truth to your brain over the blockchain. And you know, the concept of delivering things over the blockchain, it can be done, you know, things other than currency over a blockchain, not necessarily the Bitcoin blockchain. The blockchain just means a new type of ledger. You know, saying the blockchain, you know, it's kind of, it's not just the Bitcoin blockchain. It's kind of like when I went to Germany with my band Bomb in 1990, and we were staying in Munich at first, the first week we were there, staying at a guy's whose house was, his apartment was next to this beer garden, which is, you know, a public bar outside. And it was called the beer garden, or, you know, Das Beer Garden or Der Beer Garden. And so we go out for a drive and we get really lost. And we drove up to some guy and like used our best German and said, "Wo ist der Biergarten?" And he said, "Biergarten?" I mean, that's like driving up to someone in Atlanta and saying, "Where's the bar?" You know? And that's kind of how the blockchain is. Like, people don't understand that there is the Bitcoin blockchain. There's the concept of blockchains in general. There's the Namecoin blockchain. There's the Dogecoin blockchain. And there's a whole bunch of ideas to do other things on the blockchain. And it's kind of become a buzzword that people who don't really understand want to dump their money in because some people made a bunch of money on it early on, who, you know, early investors in it and early adopters of Bitcoin. And it reminds me a lot of the dot-com boom in the 90s. And I was working at dot-coms in San Francisco. I was like the lowest paid guy there other than the janitor. I was doing like, you know, text editing and writing, you know, like 40-word reviews of catalogs for sites that were going to deliver catalogs to people and sign them up over the internet. And there were like, you know, companies whose business plan was written on a napkin, and the plan was like, you know, sell dog food over the internet. And, you know, I mean, they got like three rounds of, you know, $50 million of angel investing and then collapsed. And there was a lot of that going on. And there's a lot of that going on with Bitcoin stuff, Bitcoin 2.0 stuff. But a lot of it is not so much angel investors, because they've all gotten wise and don't dump their money into silly things anymore. And a lot of it is just crowdfunding and people, you know, we've got this new thing that's going to deliver everything over the blockchain, to the point where that's one of the response cards in Libertarians Against Humanity, you know, blank delivered over the blockchain, because it's a joke, and it's not a joke that it can actually be done and work. But we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that some of the doubts we have about some of the Bitcoin 2.0 projects.
Yeah. So the VCs, I think a lot of them remember the kind of dot-com problems and they're hesitant.
Yeah.
Right. Venture capitalists. And so a lot of these Bitcoin 2.0 organizations are getting a lot of their funding from regular Bitcoiners and people who are very optimistic about the potential for this technology. So in a way, and I want to be very careful with how I say this, but in a way, there's some predatory behavior on the idealism of Bitcoiners going on right now. And there's a lot of these organizations that are coming out. They're doing these huge crowdfunding campaigns, you know, raising a bunch of Bitcoin, but they're not really providing any kind of product or service. They had, you know, they're saying, "Oh, well, maybe we have a white paper." Maybe they threw together a white paper at the last minute. and maybe it's not really that much of a white paper at all. And they put it out there with a lot of nice sounding jargon that people who maybe aren't as technically savvy can't decipher, or, you know, it kind of sounds nice on its face, but it's not really saying anything. It's not kind of empty wording.
Which one are you talking about? Come on, go ahead and say it.
Okay, so one of the more recent examples would be BitNation.
Okay. I was going to say MadeSafe, because MadeSafe, I actually, first of all, you couldn't find the white paper on their website. It was like a really flashy video promising the world and a good looking website. And then like there was no white paper. And so we requested that to look at the white paper and finally got it and looked at it. And I had a computer programmer, a good computer programmer, look at it. And he's like, this doesn't really explain it, man. It doesn't really explain what they're trying to do. And a lot of these Bitcoin 2.0 things are so complicated to even explain. Like Bitcoin is pretty easy to explain. And I'm not saying that just because something's more complicated means it's doomed, but it's definitely in the way of adoption if you can't easily explain it to programmers, even especially to or to the general public.
Right. And Bitcoin right now, just as a currency, has so much practical use that a lot of average people can understand and utilize. Stephanie Murphy gave a really good talk called Bitcoin Micro Business Ideas. And Bitcoin is great for entrepreneurs and things like that. Even just the currency function alone, I think, is very a very strong argument for Bitcoin. Now, these Bitcoin 2.0 companies, they want to get into a kind of broader categories. They want to talk about ID systems, reputation systems, marriage licenses, even insurance, things like that. And I don't know that we're quite there with some of this technology. A lot of it's still theoretical, and there's still, it's kind of way far out in theory, when maybe sometimes they're distracting from the kind of practical uses that you can have.
And the hype stuff often undermines the actual useful stuff. I will say this. Derek Slopey, my friend, and you know, he's the Fiends web administrator. He runs the dedicated server that we host on that's really fast and really secure. And he also programmed Meowbit, which was a really useful resolver for .bit domains, for Namecoin. Namecoin still hasn't caught on. It's basically had 3 years to do it, and it's not going to do it, and it's time for something else to do it. And Derek and I and Christian Saucier are going to solve the problem of distributed DNS pretty soon here, after we're done with Fiendphone, which Derek is programming now. And that's a pretty bold promise to make. And we're not going to be talking to VCs. You know, we may put up an Indiegogo thing, but we're the kind of people that like do this stuff anyway, whether we get the funding or not. Now, but Derek did something with the blockchain that's never been done, and this kind of fell through the cracks. Derek added a utility to Meowbit that could receive update notifications for the program over the Namecoin blockchain. That's never been done. Now, Bitcoin, there are three people that have a secret key for Bitcoin that can send an alert. Like if Bitcoin gets hacked and everyone needs to update their wallet. I mean, of course it would be put out over, you know, all the social medias, but they would also and could also send a notification that should show up in wallets. They've never used it yet, but they have the ability to do that. But the thing that we did was made it so anybody could send a notification over a program that would receive it. You know, like you get the little alerts in Windows, like time to update, blah, blah, blah. It would do that. It does that. Meowbit has that in it, and we tried it successfully. And it's more secure than doing it with the ways that it's done for programs currently. So that's been done over the blockchain. Most people don't know that.
Yeah. And it's, you know, one of the articles we have up, Bitcoin Not Bombs, is comparing Bitcoin to free speech and, you know, in the Bit license as a way of attacking free speech. And it's a pretty interesting analysis. And yeah, you are able to send messages, you know, over this public ledger. You're able to, you know, put these ideas out there. And, you know, it's really interesting. It's not just a currency, although that function provides a lot of, you know, possibilities, but it is a lot more, and which is why I do understand, you know, where some of the Bitcoin 2.0 people are coming from. There's a lot of different directions you can go with it.
Yep. There's another Bitcoin 2.0 thing that I'm not going to talk about. I'm going to give them another chance because they're still kind of launching right now, and I'm not going to say anything bad yet. I'm going to see how it goes. But
just bookmark that thought for a while. And when it happens, I'll say I told you so. And I'm not even going to say which one it is.
All right. All right. But yeah, do your due diligence. Brian Sovereign did a good talk about this, called The Danger of Reputation and Trustless Systems. And it was questioning some of the premises around, you know, do we need some of these services? A lot of people are like, especially ANCAPs, are like, why don't we privatize everything? So BitNation was to be an example of privatizing government and offering competing governance services. But I don't really want my marriage license on a blockchain. I don't even really think the idea of a license or even an ID so much. I get that people are doing the IDs now, and I think that's good for some things, but I don't really know if I want to make an ID. You know, that's kind of, I mean, I don't like my government ID. I don't like that I am married. You know, I did do the legal marriage before I was an anarchist, but
let me clarify what you said. You do like that you're married.
I do like that.
Yeah, because you said I don't like that. It sounded like you said I don't like that I'm married. You do like that you're married.
I do like that.
But you don't like that it requires lawyers and judges and governments.
Well, you know, I did the paperwork. You know, I did it on paper before I was an anarchist. Now I would much rather have just, you know, done the ceremony, because to me, a commitment is a commitment. You know, parties are involved. You don't need the government involved in that commitment to someone.
Yeah, we got married.
You don't need paperwork.
We got married at City Hall, and we get in Southern California, and we got panhandled walking out the door. That's Southern California for you. They said, congratulations, you got a dollar.
There you go. But yeah, you know, I think we need to question some of the foundational, you know, things that these organizations are wanting to provide. And why do we even need a privatized version of some of these services? Yeah,
one of the squarest ones is, I've heard a lot of people say voting for, you know, public officers, for politicians over the blockchain, because, you know, it would remove the ability to hijack an election with hacking Diebold machines or anything like that. But using something that's decentralized, like blockchain technology, that could completely eliminate all of the so-called services that government provide at the point of a gun, and use it, you know, it's like taking the coolest thing in the world and using it for the squarest thing in the world.
Oh, yeah. I'm not a huge fan of politicians saying, oh, I take Bitcoin now, I'm Bitcoin friendly. They're just trying to scam you out of your Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah.
So also required reading a article called "Everyone's a Scammer" by Michael Goldstein. It's very good. It's maybe not what you think. I don't want to give too much of it away, because it's a necessary reading for people who are Bitcoin curious, but also who are involved in Bitcoin and have been for a while.
Give us enough that people, I mean, don't give away the plot, but give enough that people would want to go read it.
Well, it kind of talks about the problems we've been seeing with scammers, but then kind of broadens that in a heuristic sense. So it's basically an instructional of, you know, these are the ways you can kind of protect yourself. This is a mindset that you can adopt that can kind of protect yourself from some of these scammers. And it even makes a case that, this is kind of funny, like investments are scams. It goes through like a whole list. This is a scam. This is a scam. Hoarders are scammers. So a lot of people are down on people who hoard Bitcoin. I'm one of those people who I don't like to spend a whole lot of Bitcoin. And I think if Bitcoiners understand the technology enough, you know, there's a general consensus that it's going to go up in value.
It's a deflationary currency. I love spending it.
But it's fine to spend it too. I mean, it's definitely, you know, everyone has their part in the network.
Yeah. All right. We'll be back for the thrilling conclusion, the redemption in the third act, after this trip to the, I don't know if it's a Bitcoin enabled market. Depends what ads come up. Yeah, the first ad will probably be ours. It's Bitcoin enabled. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends.
Michael Dean talking to MK Lords about Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a decentralized currency. It's magic internet money that actually works. And a couple things we want to end on here for the redemption in the third act. One is the you can't cure the monkey brain. What is that article about?
Right. So my friend Andrea Castillo wrote this, and it's kind of a chronicling of her doubts and how she's kind of been, you know, so gotten a more sober view of Bitcoin. And really, it comes down to we still have to deal with people. You know, Bitcoin is competing with a system that is definitely not perfect. One of the things you hear in Bitcoin a lot is Bitcoin isn't competing with perfect. And that's absolutely true. The legacy system we live under now is extremely flawed, but Bitcoin isn't perfect either. And even worse, it has to be implemented by people, which are definitely not perfect.
Yeah, I mean, so, the nearest thing I could compare it to would be the internet. And, you know, I got on the internet in 1991 before the World Wide Web. I got on the World Wide Web at work in 1994 at one of the first internet restaurants, cafes in the world, you know, in 1994. Early 1995. It was an internet cafe at 9th and Folsom in San Francisco. I was the busboy and dishwasher. And, you know, they had a bad business plan. It was basically computers connected to the internet at each table. They served good food. It was a steak restaurant, but the computer screen for your computer was up on the wall, so everyone could see what you're doing, because they thought it was kind of like performance art that people would want to share. And that's really not how people wanted to do it. So, and then, you know, the early World Wide Web. I mean, I had a website when there were only 150,000 websites in the world in 1996. And, you know, it wasn't even like there wasn't even media, like nothing moved on the internet. There were like GIFs, animated GIFs that sparkled at you and annoyed you. But there wasn't really video. There wasn't really audio. And, you know, it wasn't very secure. Websites were a lot easier to hack. And the internet was slow. It was dial up. I got on DSL in 96, which was more than, you know, before most people were on the internet. And even so, like the internet wasn't nearly as robust or complete as it is now. And it'll never be complete. It's a work in progress. So I think blockchain technology is the same way. I think right now, Bitcoin is where the internet was in about 1995, 1996.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot too, and I would definitely agree. It's going through some serious growing pains, and yeah, ultimately, you know, we have to deal with these human drives and human nature. So, but there is some positivity. I do want to go back to how Bitcoin can end war, the Roger Ver article, and read just a little bit of that.
Yeah.
So he says, and all that's being paid all of the war monger is being paid for by printing money. And with Bitcoin, because there's a limited supply, that sort of thing can't happen in the world if the world is using Bitcoin. And that's what had me so incredibly excited about Bitcoin, is it'll prevent governments from being able to just print money at will and then use that to buy tanks and guns and bombs to murder people around the world. And so I see a world in which everyone is using Bitcoin and interacting with each other on a voluntary basis as just a much, much, much happier and peaceful and safer world for every single human being on the planet. And when I realized that Bitcoin has the potential to become the currency used all around the world and would have the ability to basically undermine every government on the entire planet's ability to wage war, I knew I had to get involved and start promoting Bitcoin full time. And that's what I've been doing for 3 years. And that's what has me so excited.
Yeah. And Roger Ver actually. I also want to add, if you weren't here at the first beginning of the first hour, we do like guns and we carry guns. We're not anti-gun. We're anti-war. And we're especially anti-guns in the hand of lunatics who won elections, which basically means didn't someone say they were a popularity contest for sociopaths?
Yes, that's exactly.
Yep.
Exactly what it is.
Didn't Roger Ver spend some time in jail basically for free speech?
Perhaps. Was it Roger Ver?
Yeah, he did. It was, I forget what the circumstances were, but it was, it was for free commerce. He was selling something on a website that was like a firecracker for driving vermin off your farmland. And it was something that like a lot of other sites were selling, but he was running for office in the Libertarian Party. This is before he just gave up on politics and went full on Bitcoin. Okay, yeah. But yeah, they went after him intentionally because he wouldn't stop selling this thing that lots of other sites were selling that they weren't going after. Yeah, they'll get you if they want you. But we'll escape on the blockchain.
Perhaps.
It's been a great show, and you passed the audition. You have been moved up from third wheel to second wheel on the Freedom Fiends, MK Lords.
Woo! Woo! Worms.
Worms. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Worms.